Okay, number five. Can you sum it up?
Comes after four, I guess.
Welcome to the I Did a Pod, a podcast about what else? You know, the Iditarod, the sled dogs, and the pursuit of greatness. We are a production of the great Alaska Public Media. That was Dallas Seavey off the top, and maybe you've heard he just won his fifth Iditarod championship, tying for the most ever, and he's only 34 years old. So a Seavey of some kind is the champ again for the seventh time in the last 10 years. I'm just your podcast host, Casey Grove, joined once again by my colleague, the ever-hustling reporter Tegan Hanlon, who's still in Willow. Hi, Tegan.
Hey, Casey.
Before we spread out some straw, chew on a chunk of frozen salmon, and take a nap like a sled dog, how about a word from our sponsor?
Hi, this is Lee Bowling from the band Sassafras. We created the song you're listening to right now for the Iditapod. We love the Iditapod.
Oh, thanks, Lee. We talked it over and we love you too.
Yes.
Tegan, how many hours have you slept since you got up to walk down to the finish line this morning?
I have slept 0 hours, but I did drive to the finish line, so to correct the record, but I have not slept since I drove there.
So you maybe saved some energy by driving, but you've been up for a while. We are going to get right to it. That's right. Dallas Seavey won. He ties Rick Swenson. He hasn't committed to returning next year, but it sounds like he wants to break that record at some point. I have a feeling he's going to be back next year, but we'll see. We'll talk more about that. Aaron Burmeister and Brent Sass in second and third place, respectively. Mille Porsild is the top female in just her second Iditarod. She won Rookie of the Year last year. We also have some speculation to do about Rookie of the Year contenders this year. We also have a listener question and a musher answer. Tegan, let's start at the finish line, which wasn't a burled arch this year. Paint me a picture, but with words.
Sure. So it wasn't a burled arch, but it was like a wooden arch that mushers passed under. And speaking of not walking to the finish line like we normally sometimes do in Nome, I could in fact drive from my home in Anchorage to the finish line here at Deshka Landing, which is like a popular boat launch in Willow. Also, unlike Nome, it was quiet. And we kind of saw that coming, similar to the race start, pretty strict COVID-19 protocols in place that really limited spectators. So there was family at the finish line. There were a bunch of race officials, race volunteers. The Iditarod has this media crew called the Iditarod Insider, and there was a bunch of camera guys. But there wasn't just like random Alaskans or tourists or other folks there to spectate. So it was a quiet scene. I drove down, maybe an hour before Dallas Seavey was expected to come in after anxiously checking the tracker all night. And it was, 4 a.m. Temperatures were in the teens. And that was it. And that's what Seavey came into. And there was no like big siren like in Nome when, the mushers get onto Front Street. So there was no siren, and the mushers just kind of like showed up. You eventually saw them coming over this little hill. So in the case of Dallas Seavey, he was first in shortly after 5 a.m. Monday. His mom and dad were in the finish shoot along with, reporters, race crew, et cetera. And he and his 10 dogs just, dashed in. There was cheers. There was applause. But it was certainly, the volume was turned down compared to normal.
So even in this very different Iditarod this year, not a big surprise at the end, right? Dallas's team appears in the finish shoot. Another Seavey wins the Iditarod.
Right. And for a while there, it seemed like it might be kind of close. It was like Aaron Burmeister and Dallas Seavey seemed to be running kind of opposite run rest schedules. So we would see Dallas rest on the trail or the checkpoint and Aaron passing him and then vice versa. So when they got to Skwentna, which is like almost 70 miles from the finish line where they have to take their 8-hour mandatory rest, it's like the White Mountain of this out and back route. Anyway, when they got to Squintna, there was just an hour separating Dalasivi and Aaron Burmeister. And it seemed like, you know, anything can happen in this race. So there was a point overnight where it was like, are we going to see Aaron Burmeister try to pass Dallas? Is something going to happen? It's partially why I couldn't sleep last night. I was like, well, if something happens, I don't want to miss it. So I'll just hit refresh on my cell phone screen a million times. But Aaron Burmeister did not pass Dallas overnight. In fact, that hour lead became more like a 3.5 hour lead by the time Aaron crossed the finish line.
So before Aaron pulls in second place, what was sort of the finish like for Dalasivi?
Sure. So Dallas came through the chute. He immediately got this like big bear hug from his mom and dad, who were standing right there. And then Dallas walked down, his dog team petting each dog as he went down, congratulating them. You know, a lot of like, oh, is it like time for a rest? Some like cooing baby talk to them. And then he posed for photos, came back, and they do this mandatory gear check every year. There's sort of this like very structured routine, right, in the finish shoot. And we saw that again last year, where he goes through, a race official asks him for, you know, do you have your axe? He shows him the axe. Do you have your snowshoes? Shows the snowshoes. And then something different and exceptional about this year was, after that, he got swabbed for COVID-19, which was, you know, in the race protocol since the beginning, that the mushers would get tested at the finish line. And then he got a big giant check for about $40,000. And this year, instead of a pickup truck, he got a snow machine.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, the pickup truck used to be the thing that the mushers would joke about. Like when they were leaving White Mountain, they would say, I'm not going to decide what color pickup truck I'm going to get. Ooh, it's too early to say, you know. So a snow machine, that's interesting. And we played that clip at the start of the podcast. Dallas was joking a little with Iditarod Insider's Greg Heister about how five comes after four. But he did quickly admit that this fifth win was a big deal to him.
Yeah, no, it's a big deal. You know, ever since I won my first Iditarod and was the youngest to win, people have been asking about, oh, you're going to get five, you're going to get five. And I've always said I'm going to get the next one. And someday five might be the next one. And that's today. You know, it was finally the next one and we got it. And yeah, it's huge, man. I mean, I've looked up to Iditarod champions my whole life and I've dreamed about this my whole life. And now to actually go from that, you know, to see it happen, to realize it, that's pretty cool. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that fifth win is a huge deal. It's pretty historic. The last and only musher to ever win five Iditarods was Rick Swenson, who notched his final victory back in 1991. And then since then, there's been this kind of, I don't know if you want to call it a joke, but that the fifth Iditarod win is cursed or jinxed, because you had all of these mushers get to four wins and no one could get to five. That includes Susan Butcher, Martin Boozer, Lance Mackey, Doug Swingley, Jeff King, and at one point it included Dalasivi until this year. He got, you know, his fifth win, and he's, as we mentioned earlier, 34, so there's certainly that question of, like, how many more wins will Dallas rack up in his years racing?
Yeah, and you had that interview with him from well before the race start where he talked about maybe doing not every year, but like four out of every five Iditarods or something like that. And even at the end of this race, he was somewhat noncommittal about racing next year. He was obviously tired, ready to be done with the race. So it's maybe a tough time to ask somebody that question. In any case, he didn't really sound like he was going to dwell too much on this victory before thinking about what comes next.
Yeah, where do you go from here, you know? I think right now it's just enjoy it. You know, I try to give myself a little bit of time after each one to revel in it, and then it's time to move on to the next one and forget about it and focus on doing the next, whatever it is. May it be this, maybe something else, but whatever you're doing, give it your whole attention, and we'll dwell on the records or the numbers when we're too old to keep doing it. That's the time to look back at it, but for right now, I want to keep moving. So I'll allow myself a couple weeks to be like, heck yeah, we actually pulled that off. And then we'll start focusing on what's next.
he certainly wasn't at the finish line, like talking about his 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th Iditarod victory to come. Instead, he was like, I'm not saying whether I'm going to race in 2022 or whether I'm not going to race in 2022, the 2022 Iditarod. We'll see what happens, which I think he talked about a little bit at that in that pre-race interview, that to be really competitive in the Iditarod, it's just this all-consuming sport. And he talked about his young daughter and said, you know, sometimes I'm thinking about, like, do I really want to be out training for days and days and days, or do I want to be at home reading to my daughter Annie?
So of course, a huge factor in whether an Iditarod musher does well or not are their dogs, and that encompasses quite a bit of breeding and training and, you know, bonding with them and having a good connection with them. So I have to ask, which dog or dogs did Dallas choose to honor with the Golden Harness Award?
Yeah, so that award is what the winning musher gets to give to a particularly outstanding dog or dogs. And Dallas chose two dogs. Their names are North and Gamble. And North is this little gray dog that led Dallas into the finish chute along with its sibling, West. And then Gamble is this 8-year-old dog with black fur and a whitish brownish face. And so during this Golden Harness little ceremony, Dallas sits on this, you know, big kind of white block with a dog on either side. And the race officials put these big yellow roses, like this big yellow rose necklace around them. And then they just kind of chill and get a lot of photos taken. And the dogs seem very just relaxed. And I don't know if they knew what was going on, but they were the stars of the show, of the media show, for a little bit.
And here's Dallas talking about North and Gamble at the finish line.
North and his brother West both are super leaders, but North a little bit more so. Their father is Reef, who was my main leader in three of my four previous wins, so it's pretty fun to be here with his sons now. But I had another one, Prophet, who was supposed to be my number one leader this year, and he cut his pad on his foot early on, and so I had to leave him out, and that left a real void in the team. And North stepped up in an epic way as far as being an athletic leader who was willing to go up there, set a fast pace, run every run and lead, and do it quickly and happily, and that's what makes him so invaluable in this team. There were other younger leaders in the team that did a great job, and they could support North on a run or two, but they'd need a break in between. North can do it every time. And then Gamble, he's the brains of the operation. So in those critical places, leaving checkpoints when the young dogs are getting off the straw, they're a little bit uncertain, I'd put him in lead for the first 10 miles of a run. Get us out of the checkpoint, get us on the trail, get everybody warmed up, and then I'd move him back in the team and let the young guys take over now that their confidence was boosted, they've woken up, they've had a snack, and then all the technical steering was Gamble's job. And Gamble, when I was sitting on this very same box in 2012, I was holding his two parents, his mother Guinness and his father Diesel. And Guinness got the Golden Harness Award that year as well. So those are his parents. And his brother, Hero, is actually a Yellow Rose lead dog as well, exact same parents. And now Gamble as well. But this guy is phenomenal. 8 years old. He won with me in 16. 5 years later, he wins again in 2021. So that's a pretty long career. And one of the sweetest dogs I've ever gotten to work with. Just sweet, sweet boy.
So aside from Dallas Seavey winning his 5th Iditarod and what may come next, we don't know. I really feel like that second place finish by Aaron Burmeister, he's from Nome and mushes around Nenana. I think that's super interesting.
Yeah, and this was Aaron's 20th Iditarod race and his highest finish. He's kind of pretty consistently in the top 10, but never as high as second. And he mentioned very soon after he got into the finish chute that he's been racing the Iditarod since he was 18 years old, which is just like, you know, Dallas Seavey too. And I don't know if it was sadness exactly in the finish line from Aaron, but you could tell that there was certainly a point in the Iditarod where, you know, he thought he could win. He thought that this was finally his year. And he mentioned that kind of jokingly in the finish chute that, you know, oh, I thought like I was going to win and then I could finally retire from the race. our pal Mark Lester with the Anchorage Daily News was standing next to me in the finish chute and asked Aaron how he felt coming into Deschke Landing, and here's what he said.
This is your 20th Iditarod, your best finish yet. How are you feeling about it?
It wasn't quite good enough. No, 20 Iditarods, it's been a long time. My first race was 1994 when I was 18, so it has been a lot of years of chasing this race, but it's not just a race, it's an event, it's a lifestyle. It's something that we love and love being a part of, and this year was a different challenge with a different course and not having a whole lot of interaction in the communities, which is one of our favorite parts of the event and the sport, is traveling to the villages and seeing the people out there and being a part of it and being a part of the history of it. But it's just been an honor to be a part of an event that took place this year and be able to be out here on the trail.
I don't know if maybe it's more than hinting. It seems like he's straight up saying that he's thinking about retiring soon from the Iditarod. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, and I had really just asked him what he was thinking about on that final run to the finish.
What was going through your head?
Oh, it was going through my head that I wasn't first place. I was hoping to have first place. It could be my last one. I could retire and be done with it. But and it still be a part of the event, but in a different aspect. Next year's the 50th anniversary. I want my final Iditarod to finish in my hometown in Nome. And so I'll probably participate next year in the 50th and be done racing and spend more time with the family. It's a busy lifestyle, and everything in our lives as mushers when we're racing and competing at this level is the bond with your dogs and the time on the trail with the dogs. So we'll get up at 7 in the morning and we'll get home at 7 or 8 in the evening after spending all day, whether we're on the trail or in the kennel or working with them. And it takes that bond. They're not just our dogs, they're our kids, they're our family. And when we spend that much time together, that's what makes it special, and that's why they perform for you, is because they love you. And but it takes away from my time with my family as well. And come on over here, son. And this guy, look at him. He's 12 years old and he's about to pass me up. And I'm missing that. And he'll ask me in the evenings before bed, Dad, are we running dogs tomorrow, or are you going to be on the trail all day? And that it at this age, it makes it a lot harder to be out there hooking up dogs every day when you got kids growing up wanting dad time too, and they've got their own activities and events. So it's a trade-off. I love the lifestyle. I've lived it my whole life and love it very much, but I'll still always be a part of it.
These mushers, when you see them after finishing this race, whether it's 7 days or 8 days or more days than that, they all look extremely tired. They've been out in the elements, maybe even more so this year than others. And Tegan, you had a chance to ask Aaron and Dallas what they were going to do after more than a week on the trail without a shower or a bed or running water. What did they say?
Well, Aaron said the first thing he was going to do was take a shower and then hang out with his family. And then as for Dallas, he said he was trying to do basically nothing.
I'm going to enjoy a minute where I don't have anything that has to be done right now. Because that's the part that hasn't been there. Even when you sleep, the rare moments you get on the Iditarod when you sleep, you have to do it right now. And it is a job, it is a chore. I have to go to sleep so that I can serve my team. Every minute on this race, you ask yourself, what can I do right now to support my team? And sometimes the answer is I have to sleep for 10 minutes so that I can think clearly and take care of them later. So that's what I enjoy most, is I'm gonna sit down, I'm gonna have a few of these guys with me, and I'm gonna have nothing to do right now other than just enjoy that moment. Thank you.
But actually, small town Alaska, I am staying at a dry cabin close to Deschke Landing, and we heard from the lodge owner that Dallas and a bunch of his family members, dog handlers, all came into the lodge that I am looking at right out the window for a really big breakfast right after the finish. Mitch Seavey said Dallas had the biggest piece of berry pie he'd ever seen with ice cream.
So Dallas Seavey's in first place, Aaron Burmeister's in second place, and then with also his top finish in the Iditarod in third place, Eureka musher Brent Sass arrived about an hour and 20 minutes behind Burmeister. Then we saw Willow's Wade Mars basically mushing back onto his home turf in fourth place. That ties his highest finish. But what about Millet Porsild? She's the top female Iditarod finisher in fifth place in just her second Iditarod. She was also just 20 minutes behind Wade and only about 13 minutes ahead of Girdwood musher Nicholas Petit. So that race for 4th, 5th, and 6th places was actually pretty close, all bunched up.
Yeah, it was. And right, Millet ran a really impressive Iditarod, just her second one. It's interesting, I was going through her race bio a little bit, and she actually started mushing dogs for expeditions, so not to race, but to, you know, go out into the wilderness, which I guess is kind of what the Iditarod is, part wilderness, part race.
Yeah. And maybe it's just me or the confusion last year from the coronavirus, but I feel like Millet winning Rookie of the Year really got lost in the shuffle. There also wasn't the usual awards ceremony, so maybe that's part of it. Anyway, she took 15th last year, 5th this year, and some folks, Quince Mountain, were very optimistic about Millet this year, and they weren't wrong. Many Rookies of the Year end up going on to be serious contenders. Who are we looking at this year as a possible Rookie of the Year finisher?
It looks like potentially Chad Stoddard, who's from Anchorage. And at the time of this recording, he's in 22nd place.
And I think we have to admit, we don't really know too much about Chad Stoddard other than what we can see in his bio. One thing that stands out is that his great-grandpa, William Burke Sr., delivered mail around the time of the 1925 Serum Run. And has family ties to Nenana. So that's a pretty interesting little factoid that his mushing, you know, lineage, if you want to call it that, goes all the way back to the 1920s. I did see an insider clip from him earlier in the race, and I think the one thing that really stood out to me was how soft-spoken he was. He was just sort of like loving on his dogs and talking to them and just was very like soft-spoken, and you could kind of see that the dogs were like very chilled out hanging out with him. So it'll be interesting to see how Chad does, if he in fact does win Rookie of the Year. We'll just have to wait and see. We still have mushers coming in as we speak. As for the rest of the top 10, we have Ryan Reddington coming in 7th. That's one better than his previous best, 8th last year. He's scratched from the Iditarod a few times, and so just finishing is great, but to finish in the top 10 and in 7th is awesome for Ryan. Your Life Seth Olsom came in 8th. Of course, he was the 2018 champ. He has actually never finished outside the top 10 in 9 consecutive races since 2013, so that's impressive to maintain that streak. Richie Deal from Antioch, the Kuskokwim 300 champion, in 9th place with his second top 10 finish in 9 Iditarods. He had to scratch last year, so I'm sure he's very happy to have finished strong in the 2021 Iditarod. And then in 10th place, Ramey Smith for his 12th top 10 finish out of a whopping 25 starts. He's only scratched once. And Tegan, as of this recording, if that's the top 10, how many mushers are still out on the trail?
There are a total of, drumroll, I have to do math. Casey, there are a total of 26 mushers still on the trail.
All right. And of course, definitely by the time this pod drops, there will be a lot more mushers that have come in. But at the time of this recording, there's still quite a few people out on the trail. That, of course, does not include the folks that have scratched. Maybe none bigger than Allie Zirkel earlier in the race suffered a pretty serious injury. Sounds like she was concussed and maybe dislocated her shoulder, had some kind of upper body injury. And then there's also Pete Kaiser. What happened with Pete Kaiser?
So Pete Kaiser scratched in McGrath on the way back to McGrath, so over halfway into the race. And the Anchorage Daily News was reporting that his dogs had some sort of stomach bug.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, he was talking about how he maybe could have pushed on through, but he wasn't really in a competitive position at that point. So he decided to scratch, which is often the Iditarod, you know, describes that as, you know, scratching in the best interest of the dog team. And it really does sound like that's what happened with Pete Kaiser's team this year. The scratches, of course, happened during the race. There were a few folks that had withdrawn prior to the race. And those withdrawals are actually the subject of today's listener question.
Hey, Casey. Hey, Tegan. This is Jessica in Chicago. And I actually have a question about this year's mushroom roster. It seemed like there was a bunch, like maybe 20, maybe a little less than 20 that withdrew before the race, which there's always some, but that seemed like a lot this year. And if you guys knew if it was because of the changes in the race, I know there's some challenges with the mushers coming in from overseas, but if you could speak to that, and especially Jeff King, he withdrew too, so didn't know the reasonings behind that. So if you could help answer that, that would be great. Thank you. Have a great day.
Oh my gosh, I am flattered she said my name.
I know. It's so personable. It's like...
I love.
Okay.
I'm Jeff King, four-time Iditarod champion. I've been in the event 29 years of the last 30, I believe, or 29 of the last 31, something like that. But this year, you know, it's kind of a perfect storm for me. Not running the race. I had some serious health issues that needed to be addressed in March of last year, and they pretty much took the wind out of my sails for most of the year. Combined with COVID and a huge hit to my business, then on top of that, the route change for the Iditarod was, I'm thrilled they pulled it off. I really am, and more power to Rob and the Iditarod Trail Committee for making it happen, because I wouldn't have bet heavy that they could even pull it off. But it seemed like they pulled off a really good race. But I not sorry I missed this one. I do enjoy the hospitality of the villages along the way. I enjoy the scenery of the coast and the people of Nome. Combined with all of that, it just seemed like a year that was easy for me to sit out. But again, I'm thrilled that the Iditarod pulled off an event, and it seems to have been done very well and safe in light of the situation they were confronting. As far as why other mushers a high withdrawal rate, I'm sure everything I mentioned, besides maybe my health issue, were not unique to me. I mean, I'm sure a lot of mushers took a hit with their business. Their income was probably affected. And it may be the richest dog sled race in the world as far as the purse, but people are not doing this for the money, and they need to have a bank account somewhere to get through the race. So my guess is, again, COVID, change of course, and their potential disposable income probably affected some of those that pulled out. I want to also obviously go on record saying those who travel from overseas. Last year's champion, Thomas Werner, couldn't come because of travel restrictions. Pretty obvious that COVID impacted his ability. He barely got home after last year's race. So it was a big deal, and it's a really big deal. A real feather in the hat of Iditarod that they pulled off an event against these kinds of circumstances.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. I know I told you I wasn't going to ask follow-up questions, but I have to ask, are we going to see you back in the race next year?
Yeah, I get asked a lot, am I going to be back in the race next year? I've got a handler that wants to run my team in the worst way, and I actually had a conversation with her just a day or two ago saying, don't count on my team, because I'm not willing to say I'm not running. I can't tell you that I am, but there's no question I've slowed down, but still absolutely love mushing and traveling with the dogs, and I'd love to do it again. I have the dogs and the environment. I have a couple of great people helping and some very generous sponsors that have helped regardless of my competitiveness or not. I will pencil in a yes, but it is with some reservations that I get my fitness back.
Thanks, Jessica in Chicago, for the question, and thanks to Jeff King up in Denali for answering it. It sounds kind of complicated, actually, Jeff's decision to withdraw from this year's race or to not race this year, and it sounds maybe also as complicated his decision on whether to race next year. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I think we've all been recalibrating quite a bit over the last year, and you know, we made this joke about how this season of the Iditapod was sponsored by lowered expectations. We are definitely hoping to be back and better than ever next year. But for now, if you're still looking for Iditarod content from Alaska Public Media, you can head to alaskapublic.org/Iditarod. We have all of Tegan's wonderfully written out stories. We've got all kinds of photography there. And of course, every episode of the Iditapod lives there at alaskapublic.org/Iditarod. And I kind of want to borrow Jeff's non-committal answer about whether there'll be another episode of the Iditapod this season. I'd like to just say, yeah, pencil us in, but don't count on it necessarily. But we definitely will continue to follow the end of this race as more teams come across the finish line, or not, depending on where they end up. And of course, those stories will be at alaskapublic.org/Iditarod. This is a production of Alaska Public Media. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. I'm your host, Casey Grove.
And I'm Tegan Hanlon.
And until next time, happy trails.
What's your name?
Monica.
And are you having fun today?
Yeah.
What's your favorite part about all of this?
The doggies.
That's a good answer. What do you like about dogs?
Because they're so soft.
Also a good answer.